Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. I am Ness Jones. I'm in Australia, and I'm from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. If you hear heavy breathing in the background,
not me.
It's because I am in the middle of a heat wave, or we are, where I am in Queensland, Australia, and my dogs are a little bit hot, and yeah, you might hear some heavy breathing. So enjoy. and with me today is...
there's me, Sarah McLaren from the UK. So we'll go the other way. If you hear any teeth chattering, it's probably me. Although it's not that bad in the UK at the minute. I'm from Separation Anxiety Solutions. And with me is the lovely...
Daisy Bell. And I am in the US with Focused Fun. Today we have a super, super special guest.
Super special.
To talk with us about puppies. And that is... Jess Ring, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm so excited to talk about puppies. Who doesn't Yay. Love to talk about puppies? I am Jessica Ring from the US. I am from my fantastic friend, and I do all sorts of different fun things online. So I have puppy classes, basic skills classes, tricks classes, and I do all of that in private classes as well. And I also work with separation anxiety. So along with the other three lovely ladies here, I'm one of four SA Pro behavior consultants.
In the world.
Really happy.
In the world.
In the world.
In the universe.
Yes, there's only four of us in the world, and Jessica at this stage, and Jessica is one of them. So Jess, can I call you Jess? Because
yes,
we can have the Jess and Ness show.
We'll just get pretty
serious. Oh, yeah.
Have the Jess and Ness show.
What do you reckon? Lots of S's in our names.
Yes.
Can I ask you where you got your name of your business from, My Fantastic Friend? Because I love it. It's awesome.
Oh, wow. It's just something I came up with. I actually had the logo first. My logo is a little... dog illustration, and the dog's wearing a cape with a heart on it. And so then I came up from that whole thought of superheroes and My Fantastic Friend, and some of my classes, it's kind of changed over the years, but my manners class is called Magnificent Manners, and Wonder Pup is my puppy class. So that's kind of where that came from. And I used to say, be your dog's hero, train force free is my tagline. But that's kind of changed a little bit too. Now I say that I help you bring out the best in your dog for a happier life together.
Jessica, one of the questions that I had for you first was, obviously you do puppy classes and you do them online, yeah?
That's right.
Yep. I just wondered, is there anything that you've changed in your puppy classes since you've started to study separation anxiety? Is there anything you weren't doing before that you're doing now?
Oh my gosh, yes, because I used to not really talk that much about teaching puppies to be home alone. And that is now a big topic of conversation in puppy classes, as well as spreading the love. So emphasizing that more, it ties in really nicely with puppy socialization. And it's just something we can emphasize in another way, relating it to teaching puppies to be comfortable with a wide range of people. So for everyday life, but also so they feel comfortable if they're not with their one special person or a couple of special people, that their whole world doesn't revolve around one or two people, but there are lots of people and lots of good things in their lives. And I think the last big change is I used to be, well, let me put it this way. I'm much more sensitive now to puppies who may vocalize or who may show a little potential discomfort with being alone or being confined, I'm much more sensitive to that because now I'm more aware that puppies can get separation anxiety and they do get separation anxiety. So I'm much more about, all right, let's just go to whatever the puppy's comfortable with right now and build up gradually from there. No more of this. Let's just let them whine a little bit and kind of see how it goes, and it goes on a little bit. And, you know, I used to say, don't come back if your puppy whines. And now I'm a lot more, I don't know, aware that there could be something more going on there, or we could accidentally kind of add to a potential problem and traumatize the puppy, not trying to.
I think that leads really well into some of the myth conceptions that people have about raising puppies or puppies and separation anxiety in general. The first one being puppies don't get separation anxiety, right? So, we've all seen that puppies can and do get separation anxiety. But I think a big one for a lot of people is puppies don't get separation anxiety. It's just normal whining and crying and complaining and that sort of thing. Is that something that you address in your puppy courses, Jess?
Yes, especially we do have some discussion in puppy classes as well. So people will sometimes bring up different things their puppies are doing that I can then say, okay, we do want to look at, let's see your puppy on video when they're home alone. Are they really okay? Or I just dig into it a little more deeply, but I also do make them aware that puppies can get separation anxiety.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other misconceptions you guys have heard surrounding puppies?
I wrote down a little list as you were talking. So
go for it.
Related to what you were just saying, that they'll grow out of it.
That's a huge one.
And that can be for a lot of different puppy issues, that they'll just grow out of it, not just comfort being home alone or discomfort being home alone or being in a separate room or being confined and just separated by a gate or something like that. So that's one, they'll grow out of it.
Mm-hmm.
What about let them bark it out? Just let them go, they'll be all right.
there's a lot of push as well to confine puppies these days, isn't there? There's a lot of push to get them in crates, to get them in pens, to confine them in areas, and to teach independence by leaving them in rooms on their own and things. And that's not always the best idea either, is it, Jess?
That's a really good one. That's a really good point. The teaching independence part is really interesting. That seems pretty pervasive out there, that people think they definitely need to teach them to be their puppies to be away from them. And it's almost a little bit backwards if we think about it. The puppies aren't uncomfortable being alone or being confined because they weren't because they're not independent. It's that they haven't learned that it's safe for them to be away. So if we just force them to be separated, if we just kind of force them and they're not comfortable to be in another room thinking, oh, that's going to teach them independence, we could actually make things worse. Same things with crying it out, right? We run the risk of them actually becoming sensitized, where they're more and more uncomfortable with it, or it's very traumatic. And puppies are at such a important phase where positive and negative experiences make such a huge impact that we really want to be protective of that. But as they get more comfortable and as they learn that it's safe to be by themselves, then we usually start to see that independence kind of happen on its own and kind of happen as a nice side effect.
And even with not puppies, with dogs, I mean, how many times have we seen that in training with separation anxiety dogs who follow all the time because they're fearful of being left, and then the pet parent suspends absences and starts the training, and all of a sudden, you know, you're getting these texts, oh my gosh, I was able to leave the room, or I was able to go upstairs, or my dog went outside by themselves, or, you know, all of this independence happening, but it's just because they felt safe. So the very first thing is that the dog has to feel safe to be able to explore on their own, or, you know, show those signs of independence. And so if they're feeling fearful, then you're not teaching your dog what you think you're teaching your dog. You're not teaching them to be independent just because they're alone when they're crying.
Yeah, you can create more clinginess from the dog or puppy, what have you. And there is such a school of thought of, oh no, you must teach the dog, the puppy, that it has to be away from you. You must put it in a pen. You must put it in a crate. And I believe in crate training. I've got no issue with crates, but this forcing the poor little thing. You wouldn't do that to a baby or a toddler. If a toddler, you wouldn't say, toddler, I want you to learn to be independent. I'm going to lock you in a cupboard or something. Although maybe you might, I don't know. but yeah.
I heard someone, I don't even know where this came from, but talking about, you know, if you go someplace with your toddler that they don't quite feel comfortable with, they may hold your hand and stay with you and sort of venture off a few steps away and then come back and hold your hand again. And they may over time be comfortable being away from you more and more. And I think we can kind of think like that with our puppies as well, that they can go and play with a toy or work on a puzzle toy and they can come back to us. We're still there. They can feel safe and they can kind of gain that independence over time. It's not that we don't want to ever expose them to these things. We just want to do it in a safe way. And I'm with Ness. I don't have any problem with crate training or confinement training as long as we do it, as long as we do it in a gentle, gradual way. So we don't want to just traumatize them and throw them in there. And I think to Sarah's point as well, we don't have to use crates, right? They're helpful when working on potty training and not so much chew training, because you don't really need that small of a space to puppy proof, but they can be helpful with potty training, but there are other ways we can achieve that. So some puppies just, it's just such a struggle to be in the crate. Even if you follow a really gradual crate training plan, they're just still so uncomfortable in there that it's probably not worth the effort. I say probably, it's really not worth that effort sometimes, because you're probably going to end up with a potty trained puppy before you get a crate trained puppy, because they're so uncomfortable with it.
Right. And that's not helped by the other common advice, which is for people when they bring the puppies home to put them in a crate in a different room and for them to sleep away from them, which is another big one, isn't it? And that's I mean, you must get people asking you about that quite often, Jessica.
Oh yes, and a lot of times people are very relieved when you tell them it's fine, let the puppy sleep in your room. I mean, I'm fine with the puppy sleeping in your bed, as most of the time my clients tell me that their puppies who do sleep in the bed, they're not having accidents in the middle of the night. They're either in a small enough space on that bed with their humans that that's going to kind of prompt them to hold it, or the humans are right there, so it's easy for them to wake them up and let them know, hey, I need to go potty. So a lot of my clients who have just gone right to being okay with the puppy sleeping in the bed have actually been getting more sleep than some of the clients who put their puppies in the crate in the other room. Or I'll have clients who put their puppies in a crate right next to the bed, and that seems to work out pretty well for a lot of those puppies too. But yeah, just to bring them home. And I mean, I'm sure that you may have talked about this before on your podcast, but little puppies.
Are you saying you don't listen to our podcast, Jessica?
I do, but you have so many episodes now. I just can't. I feel like you've probably talked about everything at this point. But we bring these puppies home and they're taken away from everything they've ever known. So they've lost wherever they were staying, probably their mom, their litter, whatever family situation it was, they've lost all of that. And we've also breed, we've also bred dogs to really be social with us. So that's a tough situation for those little baby puppies coming into our houses. Whatever we can do to make that easy for them and just make it feel really safe, help them transition. It's just really, really helpful.
It's so true. I had a foster person who was fostering puppies, and there were three young puppies, like around 6 weeks. And so she was fostering the three of them, and they were all in a crate in her kitchen at night. And she called me after like the third night she had them, and she was like just at the end of her rope. I don't know what to do. These puppies won't sleep at night, you know, blah, blah, blah. Just really, you know, when you don't get enough sleep, how, and having three young puppies is a lot of work. Mm. So, you know, no blaming there, but she didn't know what to do. I was like, put the crate in your room. So she called me the next day. She's like, oh my gosh, I wish I tried that sooner. And I was like, yeah, it's just, you know, so that's so true, is that, because people think it's like the quote unquote right thing, they try to push it, and they're not happy and their puppy isn't happy. And even if you really want your puppy to sleep in a crate at night, usually just moving the crate to your room is enough for them to feel safe, and everybody sleeps better. So
talking about breeders, Jess, do you talk to breeders at all about their early development of puppies and what they should be doing to maybe negate separation anxiety at all?
I don't really connect with any breeders in my area, but it's a really good point, because they've got those puppies in sort of the prime stage for socialization. And when the puppy comes home to the guardian, they're still within that socialization window, but think of all those really important weeks that came before that at the breeder. So it is really impressive to me. And I think the right thing to do when I hear of a breeder who's really doing some nice socialization, teaching puppies that all of the things that they're going to experience throughout their lifetimes are safe and good when they're at this age where they can just kind of be little sponges and really, really gain a lot from those positive experiences. One of my myths was just throwing them in the deep end. So I think that kind of ties into what we were talking about, where just throw them in a crate and hope they get used to it. And that ties into so many other things as well. You know, if we're trying to teach our puppy that new places are safe and good, we don't want to take them to some really busy environment with all these, just too much going on where they're really overwhelmed. We want to think about all of this stuff gradually and really learn dog body language. So really, just like with separation anxiety, we want to make sure that our puppies are feeling safe and comfortable in their positive experiences. So learning about body language, so we can tell, are these puppies happy? Are they relaxed? Or are they getting worried? Are they unsure? And how can we adjust things to make this situation better for them?
I think that's so important, because I think it's so easy to go out on the internet and maybe Google socializing my puppy, and you might find so many checklists out there, right? And then you have these things that you are, you know, exposing your puppy to. But if you expose your puppy to something and they're frightened of it, you know, that's not what you're looking for. You know, you might be creating a lifelong struggle there with your dog. So the trick is, think of it more like a gentle introduction to those things, and really following your puppy's lead and giving them a choice in the matter, where you can, giving them some agency, I think always really helps a lot as well.
I think a good way of looking at that is, maybe if you have a toddler and you want to expose them to water, you're not going to pick them up and throw them in the deep end, like literally, and go, all right, off you go, which is the same as inappropriate socialization of a puppy, I guess, in that sense. Is that a good analogy? I thought it was quite good.
Yeah, it is. Let them dip their toes in before they jump in.
I've got a moth.
I've been attacked by a moth.
Sorry, being attacked by a moth. It's massive.
It is massive. The last one that I can kind of think off of right off the top of my head is that spoiling your puppy will lead to separation anxiety or spending too much time with them, or you know, like Jess was saying, letting them sleep in your bed might lead to separation anxiety. There's like so many things like that. And we know there have been studies on that, and it's just not the case. There's not a correlation there at all. So don't worry about those things. Love your puppy.
Love your puppy. Comfort your puppy. Yeah. Oh yes, let them sleep with you.
Yeah.
If you want. If you don't want, then maybe just in the same room.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can start in the same room when they're like babies. And then if you really don't want them in there, just gradually move their pen or their crate away. Yeah. But do it mindfully and gradually. Yeah.
You know, a lot of these things, it really is just okay to enjoy your puppy and help them feel safe and comfort them and have fun with them. Make their lives, which are way too short anyway, make their lives enjoyable. So when people tell me, sometimes people will sort of have a guilty kind of tone, and they tell me, oh, my dog is so spoiled, or my puppy's so spoiled. And I'm like, yay, good. I'm glad that your dog has an enriched life. And then we can talk about more about what makes you think they're spoiled. And sometimes there are some things we can work on and adjust that, you know, that they think maybe comes from being spoiled. But I think a lot of the times it's just they have this idea that they're not supposed to be letting their dog do all these things. And a lot of the times it's just something they don't need to worry about. And we could potentially be creating some problems as well by, like we talked about.
There's some other misconceptions. There's some other misconceptions about, you know, if the puppy is scared, that you shouldn't comfort it. You know, that they should just be able to deal with it, and you comforting them is going to instill more fear in them because you're comforting the fear, which, I mean, I don't know. It's, to me, that's kind of ludicrous, because I don't see how you can, if the puppy is scared, then, you know, they need to feel safe, and you just pushing them away and ignoring them isn't going to help.
Well, I always like think of it, like, I know that's like a really, really common misconception that people have. And, you know, it goes back to a little bit what Jess was talking about with that secure base thing, of the toddler holding the parent's hand to like feel reassured and then going back out to explore. And I actually recently was, Rowan's best friend's name is Odie. He loves playing with Odie. And their neighbor had a puppy who hadn't been exposed to many dogs because it was a pandemic puppy. And he came over to play. And it was so adorable to watch that puppy, because it was exactly what you're saying, Jess. It was like, the puppy would go and run with the, you know, quote unquote, big dogs, and then come back and like sit on his mom's feet for a second, and then go back out, and then come back to his mom. And it was like, it was just so adorable. But like, I was like, the whole time I'm like, secure base. Like, think about like if your friend's house got broken into and she was home when it happened, and she calls you crying, and like you're gonna ignore her, and that's gonna make her feel less fearful, or you're gonna go to her house and bring her a pint of ice cream and hug her, and that's not gonna make her feel more fearful. It's gonna make her feel reassured and calmer, and you know what I mean? Like, so to me, it's like, I know dogs aren't people, but by the same token, like, it just doesn't hold. It it makes no sense to me.
I like that analogy, Stacey, but unfortunately, so I'm terrified of cockroaches. They're my big phobia thing. We get huge ones over here and they fly at you and I'm absolutely terrified of them. And my husband is one of those get over it. So even if there's a dead one, I'm like, I'm not going near that. I'm not picking it up. And he's like, well, I'm not doing it. And I'm like, well, it's going to stay there because I'm not picking it up. But he's like, you know, I'll scream if I see a live one. And he knows, but he's like, I wish you wouldn't scream. He's like, I thought something serious was happening. You know, just.
You're like, something serious is happening.
Yeah, I know. So I get no comfort from him whatsoever. So no puns about that.
See, and that hasn't made you less afraid.
No.
Yeah, that you just got right over it because you didn't get that comfort, right? Oh my goodness. Yes. Yeah, that's a really good point too. They really sometimes need our help to feel more comfortable. So if we can get them out of that scary situation, if we're watching their body language and we see them tuck their tail, pin their ears, maybe get kind of hunchy, cower a little, or if they whine, and even if it's the opposite, instead of making themselves look small and they're trying to hide and run away, they may bark and growl and look very big and puff themselves up. They're often telling us they want distance. There's something that they feel is threatening to them. And it doesn't matter if we think that it should feel threatening to them,
right,
or if we think it should be scary to them. It matters what they feel. If they are afraid of it, then we need to respond to that. So like Ness with the cockroaches, even if we think you should just not be afraid of those cockroaches, it doesn't matter because you are, right? It doesn't matter that what we think. So with our puppies, if we do see those signs that they're uncomfortable with something, we want to get them out of that situation. And you know, the socialization checklist, they can be helpful just to see the range of things that may fall under that heading of socialization. But I like to give people a list that they can sort of rank things as the puppy loved it, they were just okay, or they were worried about it or uncomfortable with it, because they can start to see trends very quickly and they can focus on those areas and prioritize them during this really time sensitive period. We don't have a lot of time during the socialization window. And I often advise people get some distance from it, lower the intensity of whatever it is. And in separation anxiety training, we don't use food, but for other types of fears where we can use food, I'll often pair that with food and new experiences, novel experiences. That's a great opportunity to make it really positive and fun. So the first time you get the vacuum cleaner out, your puppy notices the vacuum cleaner, you can give them some treats. So that vacuum cleaner made treats magically appear. It was the predictor of all this good stuff. And we can do that with the vacuum cleaner off and it not moving at first. And then we could add movement or we could add the sound. So we want to break it down into little pieces and we can have it predict really fun, amazing things. We can do that if they've shown fear, and we can do that before if we haven't seen any fear. We can do that to create that positive association from the beginning. So with puppies and alone training, and if you have a dog or a puppy with separation anxiety, it's really similar in how we break it down. Find a version, as Jean Donaldson says, a version of the problem that's not a problem. Trying to think of other myths, I have a couple that aren't related specifically to separation anxiety. One of them is a lot of people hear the word socialization and they think it's just about puppies and other dogs. It's a lot broader than that. So that's another myth. And the other big one is waiting until they're fully vaccinated to get them out into the world.
Yes. Yeah. You hear so with the vaccine, sorry. I keep on talking over you. I'm sorry.
I was actually just going to ask if you hear those ones also, and it sounds like you have.
I think the vaccination one is a big one. And it's, you know, it's all about weighing the risks, right? So with a puppy that's not been fully vaccinated, don't take them to the dog park. You know, I mean, I wouldn't really advocate for taking a young puppy to the dog park anyways, but you know, areas where there might be a higher risk of there being a lot of dogs or a lot of dog waste, then, you know, I just wouldn't take your puppy there. But there are certainly places that you can take your puppy out that aren't real risky. So I would just stick to those. But I love just what you were saying about the list that you create. I wasn't saying that lists are bad. I was just saying that people see a list and are like, ugh. But what I really like what you're doing with your list is looking for trends, because I think that can really help people prepare for similar introductions. Like say your puppy is sensitive to new sounds. So maybe when you're introducing additional new sounds, you really up the ante and decrease the intensity of the sound, like up the ante. What I mean by that is of your treats. So the very, very best treats, and really reduce the intensity of the sound, but you know that ahead of time. So you're like making choices in how you're going to introduce the things to the puppy, and being like super, super intentional about it. So I think that leads to a more educated approach.
Is it quite often people, like you say, people kind of get by a list and think that they've got to do every single thing on it. And then you end up with people doing things that they really don't need to do for their particular circumstance. So one of the things I think it's important as well for people to do is to try to make smart decisions about where they're going to put their socialization effort. So for instance, you might get someone with a border collie, or for some unknown reason thinks because they've got a border collie it must be socialized around sheep. But if you live in the middle of London, you're probably never going to see a sheep. So when you do see one, basically just put your border collie on a lead and trundle on by. But you will see a lot of double-decker buses, or street artists, or you know, people in what they call the pearly kings and queens, people in outlandish clothes and things. So they're the things that you would need to spend all your for want of a better word, socialization money on, are the things that you are going to see and experience on a day-to-day basis. And you know, that's another thing that people need to be aware of, isn't it, with the lists?
Yes.
Yeah, good point. And I think the other problem that can come up with lists is people check off all the things, and then we have a sense that off. I'm done. Yeah. I don't need to do anymore.
Oh, yes. And that does remind me of that. Was it Bradshaw? Help me remember, where it was saying that socialization. Well, it was actually interesting because it was, we talked about this earlier in the week, but Bradshaw, there was a Bradshaw study about separation anxiety. And one of the conclusions of the study was that the more time owners spent with their dogs at a young age, and a young age was defined as 6 to 9 months of age, and the more time owners socialize their dog to people, other dogs in new environments, the less the likelihood of developing separation anxiety.
Yeah, that's true.
That was interesting
that study was 6 to 9 months, and they were...
It was interesting, but
earlier, yeah.
Yeah, I, me too. Like same exact thoughts, because what we always think of is socializing puppies during that time when they're more sensitive. But I think the mistake that a lot of us make is, okay, well, the socialization window is closed. We have checked everything off the list. Now we can go back to normal life. But what I think is really important is to, you know, keep on exposing your puppy to new things in a gentle way through that period, because, you know, it's still important. They're not as spongy, but they're still in a high learning phase, and continuing to expose them and get them comfortable with especially novel things, I think helps them generalize.
Is spongy a technical term, Stacey?
It is.
Just checking.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
small spongy puppies. Spongy. I've got visions in my head of small spongy puppies.
It's all about building confidence, isn't it? No matter what age the dog is, puppy, adolescent dog, you know, it's confidence, and that flows through their entire life, and that includes separation anxiety or not.
And that's another thing is, like, if you adopt a puppy that's out of that window, you still have work to do. It's not that you're like, well, we missed the window.
You don't need to feel defeated if your puppy is older as well, because you can still really help them through and you can still work on these things. So yeah, that's a really good point. All is not lost if you've missed that socialization window either. But if you've got your puppy while they're within that window, do take advantage of it.
Should we just tell our listeners, for those that aren't aware, what the socialized window is and what it entails?
Sure.
Not everybody knows. So I think it's probably good to let them know.
So there's a little bit of disagreement, I think, just because the, you know, science updates itself over time. So we used to say it was from about 3 weeks to 16 or 18 weeks, but now we think that socialization window could close as early as 12 or so weeks. So it's actually a little bit shorter than we thought it was. And it's just a period where it's important to give our puppies positive, happy experiences with a wide range of things. And to Sarah's point, think about what is your puppy going to experience throughout their lifetime? And we want to teach them that those things are safe and they're good and they're not a big deal. So Jean Donaldson says positive experiences pad puppies, PAD, so that if they've had this large quantity of positive experiences. So an example would be, let's say they've played with a bunch of puppies and dogs and they've had really great experiences. And then they have an experience that's not so great at some point. Hopefully they'll think it was just that dog or just that dog at that time and not, oh, all dogs are scary and bad. So you can kind of think of that in other situations as well. Pat Miller says it's teaching them to be optimists rather than pessimists. I kind of like that way of thinking about it. And we also know a lack of positive experiences during this time can result in an adult dog who has a fear of people or fear of novelty or fear of new places. So we both want to give positive experiences and avoid bad experiences. During this time.
Or a fear of being alone.
Yes. Yep. And that is a novel experience as well for our puppies.
So let's get to some solutions. We already talked about like some safeguarding type of things, like with socializing and spreading the love or building the village or whatever you want to call it. But what are some other things that we can tell our listeners that would help set their puppies up for success when it comes to being home alone?
We already talked about body language, but I think
body
that's
language
huge.
Is so important.
Body that's language so important. Is huge.
Video when you leave.
Video when you leave. I'm sort of recapping what we already talked about. Like, what did we already talk about? I think we didn't talk about how do you go about teaching your puppy to feel safe when alone. And I talk to my clients about two things. So if they're doing confinement training and crate training, they're probably doing some kind of confinement to puppy-proof at least certain areas of the house when they leave. So teaching our puppies first to be comfortable using a gradual plan and all those types of things. And I use food for confinement training. And along with that, I like to do the home alone training without food. And with that, we start where it's super easy. So for a lot of puppies, that might just be someone popping their head around the corner and playing the puppy peekaboo game, where they leave just for a split second and they come right back into the room. And that could just be inside the house. And if the puppy's doing really well with that, they seem really comfortable, then they could disappear for a little bit longer. Think in terms of seconds at first, so building up in seconds and then minutes. And they can also start to do that with the front door. The Doors Aboard door desensitization training is great for puppies as well. And I don't use food with that either. And at some point they start to dovetail together. So if they're teaching their puppy to be happy and safe and comfortable in a confinement area, potentially using food, they may start to build some alone time into that at some point. And separately from that, they're working without food. They're monitoring their puppy very closely. And at some point, those tend to come together where if they're confining their puppy, they've also built up this home alone time. And it's great to do this when puppies are, basically when they've had all their needs met, right? So they've had playtime, they've gone potty, they've had something to eat, their needs have been met, they're not raring to go, they don't have to go potty, they're not hungry. So they're going to be more likely to be able to be comfortable in these situations if they have all their needs met.
I think the biggest issue is that owners push their puppies too far, too soon. Yeah. And then the puppy has over threshold moments and that then being home alone is harder for them to learn initially.
And I think it's important to remember as well that puppies, especially younger puppies, a bit like young children, also don't quite understand that if they can't see you, that you are actually still there. So like a bit like children when tiny, babies, when you play peekaboo, all you've got to do is cover their eyes and they think that you've gone. And it's the same with a puppy, an 8, 12, to, I don't know exactly what the age is when it changes, when they realise that. But this is why when Jess is saying about, popping your head around a door and things like that, that's why it's important to start that small, because they truly believe in, as much as we know what they truly believe, but puppies don't understand that when you've gone around a door frame, that you are no longer in existence. So can you imagine that when you don't even understand human language and suddenly the person who is your world as according to you disappeared into dust, never coming back.
Another big thing I would say is see if you can take time off when you get a new puppy, or have a plan, have some helpers in your life so that you're not getting your puppy, you maybe just have a day or two off with them and then you've got to go back to work and they're there by themselves and you haven't had a chance to at all teach them that it's safe to be home alone. It's comfortable to be home alone. So besides the fact that we would want puppies to have someone coming and spending time with them and letting them out to go potty during the day, we wouldn't want to leave them at home for 8 to 10 hours anyway. But despite that, even leaving them for 2 or 3 hours, planning on having someone to come in may not be enough for a lot of puppies. That's a huge contrast between coming home with you, learning that it's safe, settling in, and then learning it's safe when you're not home with them, when they're home by themselves. And when we say home by themselves, I do often have to clarify that I mean without a human. So some puppies may be home with a cat or another dog or something like that, and they're still without the humans. So when I say home alone, that's kind of what I'm talking about. But if you can plan to take time off, a little bit of time off, or have other people involved who your puppy can stay with, or they can come and stay with your puppy while you're teaching them that this is safe, it really is worth that effort. It's definitely worth that effort where we're not going to accidentally throw them in that deep end and have this actually be a traumatic experience for them. And I don't think a lot of people think about that when they get a puppy. They just think they're going to probably be okay. And we do see a lot of puppies who aren't. So definitely we're all about setting them up.
Talking about kitty cats, I keep talking about these clients because they do amuse me so much. They're my funniest clients at the moment. I have Katie, Georgie, the dog's called Buffy and the cat's called Lola. And Buffy's a little bit scared of Lola, I think. And when Lola positions herself at the front door, and she doesn't for all the training sessions, but sometimes she'll position herself at the front door and Buffy's like, yeah, I'm not going over there. That's hilarious. And the cat is, of course, often batting at the camera and stuff like that. But it's really interesting. So the obviously we know that just because the cat's there, it's not going to comfort Buffy when the owners aren't. But Lola's actually kind of helping training, because sometimes she'll just put herself at the front door and Buffy's like, oh, okay, I might just go back to bed. It's fine. I'm fine. I'm fine home alone. It's all good.
I have a client that has cats and they eat up on a cat tree, and it's a separation anxiety client. And so during some of the training sessions, while the guardian is outside, the dog will go back and just take that opportunity to kind of sniff around for has the cat dropped any food here. And sometimes he'll actually put his feet up on the cat tree, kind of look up. It's just, I mean, he doesn't do it every session, and it's just so cute when he does it. The cats are just looking at him like, what are you doing? But he's kind of the same way, where he's very, very interested in the cats, but he's also, I think, a little bit like, I'm going to stay away from you.
Yeah, that's exactly how my dog is with our current cat. It's funny how the cats really set the tone, because with our previous cat Boots, they were like besties. They would cuddle in the bed together. They would, like, Boots would come outside and come on walks with us. I mean, they were like, Boots would come and train with us. He was like, they were like so good together. And then with our current cat Sadie, she's a little bit afraid of him and gives off like the death stare. And then Rowan is uncomfortable with her too. So they're both kind of like skeptical of each other, but I know Rowan would be fine with her if she was fine with him. And so we've been working on that, but it's been a journey, and everybody has gotten better, but it is funny how much, you know, he's a 70 pound dog. It's funny how much the 10 pound cat can control the movement of the room. You know, she'll just like sit somewhere and like give him that stare, and you're just like, oh, Sadie.
I love it.
Yeah, I really do. And it, and you're so right, Ness. It's really interesting to watch cats and dogs, or even two dogs on camera, during those home alone trainings. I love it. I really do. Okay. So, going gently, always going at the puppy's pace. I mean, that's something that's the exact same as training an adult dog or anything, is really just going at the dog's or puppy's pace. And another thing I think that we've learned from the pandemic is that it's important to expose the puppy to absences. Like, so you do want to go gently and you do want to go at the puppy's pace, but it's also important to expose them to those absences.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I'm so glad you mentioned that. That is very true. And we don't want to just be home with them all the time and not teach them that it is safe if we aren't there with them. And I think, you know, getting so many things go hand in hand. So getting people to help cover absences while you're working on teaching your puppy that that's safe, which can be a little bit more challenging with COVID as well. but that's part of spreading the love too. That's part of socializing our puppy to different people. So if they're going to that other person's house, if that person's coming to your house, that's all good stuff, because these are things that we probably are going to need our puppies to do throughout their lifetime. So a lot of it really goes kind of hand in hand with each other, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it is. It's like you can check off two boxes.
How's that list coming along, Stacey?
I love checking stuff off. I mean, you guys know that about me. So you just have to do it mindfully and intentionally. It's fine. It's fine. We're not saying checking stuff off is bad. We would never say that here.
No, we're all list makers. I'm definitely one.
Okay. I think those were the big ones for me. Does anybody have anything else?
Jess, can I ask you, I mean, a lot of people, you know, outside of the separation anxiety training really struggle with leaving their dog, for example, with their significant other while they walk into a shop, or, you know, maybe they want to tie the dog out, the front of a cafe while they go to order, or, you know, all those sort of things. I mean, what would you say to those people in terms of teaching their puppy that it's okay?
Yeah, so in those situations, if someone's going to be with the puppy and someone else is walking off into the shop, we can absolutely use food in that situation to teach the puppy. We can reinforce a skill and sort of start with what the puppy can do right now and build up to the actual thing that we need. So that might be teaching our puppy to do a sit stay or something like that while the other person walks away. So we might start with just teaching the puppy sit and sit stay, and then we start adding that person gradually walk away. Or we could use the food to teach them that it's really great when that person walks away. So we don't even have to have a particular skill in mind. We can just have one person take a step away and then feed the puppy some delicious treats. And the person comes back, they walk away one step again, and we give the puppy a delicious snack. And we can build up the number of steps and work up to that person actually being in the shop. And then we can sort of work on duration of that as well. So those are two ways you could do it if you've got someone staying with the puppy and they can use food, or staying with the dog. I know you said this wasn't just about puppies, but I would be hesitant to tie a puppy up in particular and leave them out while I go into a shop. And it certainly depends on where you are, if I would feel at all comfortable tying a dog up, because, you know, puppies, we don't want them, we want to prevent them from having those bad experiences, and really all dogs, adult dogs too, but puppies in particular, you know, imagine if something really scary for them happened and we weren't even around, right? Yeah. So anyway, you could do, if you wanted to work on that, a desensitization procedure, which is very much like what we would do with separation anxiety training, or very similar to door desensitization, where they could just take a step towards the door and step back to the dog, take a step towards the door, step back to the dog, or whatever the dog is comfortable with. You want to find out what can they do right now that's really easy for them and start there, and then just gradually build on it. So a lot like door desensitization, which your listeners have probably heard about.
Yeah, I've got a client right now that's struggling with that. So, you know, they leave the puppy, or not, when I say puppy, he's an adolescent, with one of the owners while the other one walks away to do something. And I'm like, well, you need to start working on your sit stays and using food. But I talk about the 3 D's, so duration, distance, and distraction. Make it, you know, your distraction should be none at first while you're teaching that exercise, and then gradually add that in. Obviously, your distance is how far you're walking away from the dog. Start easy peasy and gradually build, and also your duration, so how long you're walking away. So that it's important. And in terms of tying the dog up, I mean, that's not ideal. I've just had a few people say this to me, like, how do we do this? How do I leave my dog here while I do this over here? So yeah, it's at least take another thing, work on that.
Another thing that can be helpful with those types of situations, like if you are in a cafe, is if you've done mat training with your dog. A lot of times bringing the mat with you kind of gives them like a place for Rowan, that mat is like a safe space for him, kind of like a crate is for some dogs.
But they've had a lot of reinforcement around it. So
he's a lot of reinforcement around mats. Yes, he does. But like, he sees anything that could be a mat. If it's a square piece of plastic, he can go to it and lay on it. Like, he is like very matty. But you know, so for a dog that has that reinforcement history with mats, that would also be another really good strategy to use. And same thing, same using food and desensitizing slowly to them leaving, but having the mat there might add that extra layer of comfort for the dog.
With the sport I do, which is IGP, you have to do a 10-minute down stay while another dog's being worked on the field, and you have to do it out of sight in the end when you get up the higher levels. But you start gradually. You start like you are literally one, the dog's in a down stay, you are one step away, and you know, you're feeding it or treating it or whatever it is, and they're there for a second. You know, right. That's where it starts, that half a second, 1 second, reward, 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 reward. And then you just gradually build that, you know, you've got to be 30 meters away behind a blind, and they have to stay there while there's this big distraction going on, dogs being recalled and dumbbells thrown and jumps and A-frames and all sorts of things. Yeah. But you have to start at the beginning.
And takes a lot of repetitions, lots and lots of repetitions. Oh my goodness. It's tricky with separation anxiety when you're trying to cover absences and you need to run into a shop. And so it's, these situations do come up. And I think it's probably similar for people who are taking their dogs on errands with them and they're leaving the dog in a car and running in as well. We've got a lot of kind of similar situations there, because it's really hard to cover absences. So I'm glad we have some ways people can help their dogs feel more comfortable in those situations so they can get out there and do some of the things they need to do to live their lives.
Right.
So Jess, tell us all about your tricks classes, because one of the things that we know with dogs with separation anxiety is how important it is. Obviously, one arm is exercise. We need to make sure they've had adequate exercise, age appropriate, but enrichment is so important. And I often direct my clients to doing some tricks because it's fun, because we know that separation anxiety can be quite stressful for the owners. You know, there's so many emotional things associated with having a dog with separation anxiety. So we also encourage our owners to have some fun with their dogs, and what better way to do that than doing tricks with them. So tell us all about your tricks classes.
Yes, they're so much fun. I just had a class graduate last night, and I've just added a second tricks class as well. So if you go to my website, myfantasticfriend.com, there's a tab at the top that says fun, and that's where my tricks classes are. I love tricks. I love enrichment. I think they're just so valuable, and it's good to have fun with our dogs. So they last for 4 weeks, and we meet for 40 minutes each week. Tricks one, we work on touch, which is a nose target, roll over or lay flat on your side, shake and wave, peekaboo, which is that trick where dogs come between your legs from behind you and stand underneath you, spin and crawl. In tricks two, we work on bow, chin rest on the floor, paws up. So two front paws up on, or in the case of my dog Gus, one front paw up on a solar bench or something like that. Sit pretty, which sometimes we'll do with an assist, or not always for all dogs. That one we go really slowly with. Back up, paw target. So kind of like the nose target, but with their paw this time, and leg weaves. So those are the tricks that I work on in my classes. They're pretty small classes. I take six dogs maximum so that I can get around to everybody and give them some feedback. And I really love them in the online format because I just love doing them, because people have so much fun with their dogs. I can kind of see them in their home environment, and they can work and focus on the tricks that they and their dog are having fun with. So if there's a trick that they just don't want to do, or their dog is just really not feeling it, they're just tricks. They're just for fun. So that's fine. Right. Take a break, work on something else. And I don't think people feel as pressured in that environment to be keeping up with everything. And for dogs who maybe struggle being in a in-person environment, it's really nice to have those kind of options.
So it's more relaxed.
Yeah, it's definitely relaxed. It's really fun. And you can do things at home, like if you're working on something like rollover, where you can have your dog up on your bed and you don't have to bend down as much because they're up on a platform. Right. So it's kind of easier for us, and our dogs are on a nice cushy surface. So there are things we can do at home that we can't do when we're in a training center, which I really like.
Yeah, that's awesome. We'll make sure we link to that in the show notes.
Definitely. Have you got any plans to do a kind of evergreen class? So do it yourself, self-service trick course?
Oh, sort of a self-paced one?
Yeah. That's exactly what I meant.
Well, I wasn't So because I've been thinking about this, I had to clarify because I was thinking about doing some sort of like membership class where people could kind of just show up and keep working on whatever trick they wanted to. So that's why I was like, is that what you mean? Or do you mean a self-paced course? Because I was already thinking about it. I haven't planned to do a self-paced course for that because I just really enjoy the interaction with that one so much. I'm sure that would be fun for a lot of people though. I kind of got some other trainers who work with puppies to get together with me, and we put together a blog puppy socialization. And it was specific to during COVID, during lockdowns and things like that. But it has a nice overview of socialization.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. Thank you for joining our conversation with the awesome Jessica Ring. Hopefully you have learned some tricks and tips to helping your puppy be home alone and happy, and also kind of busted some of those misconceptions that seem to be like pretty popular and hanging on, fighting the good fight. So thanks for joining us, and please reach out to any of us if you do have a puppy and you're not sure if they have separation anxiety, or you've confirmed it and need a little guidance. I am Stacy Bell with Focused Fun in the U.S. My website is focusedfun.net, and you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Focused Fun Dogs.
And you've been listening to me, Sarah McLaren, from Separation Anxiety Solutions in the UK. You can find me on Facebook and on Instagram and on my website, www.separationanxietysolutions.com.
I'm Ness Jones. I am in Australia from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. You can find me at nessjones.com or on my Facebook page, Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. Jess, it's been wonderful. Thank you so, so much for coming on the show. We have loved having you on. So nice to talk to you. And good luck with everything. And I will definitely be putting all your links in the show notes.
Thank you. I had so much fun, and I'm going to have to practice that misconception. Oh my goodness, that's hard to say.
It's a tough one, but it's fun to make up your
own words. AC regularly makes up words, so that's one of them. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
Yeah. Oh.